The Woman, submitted by One Owl House Nerd.
Listen, my name is weird only because I want privacy. Also because I love the Owl House. Anyways, I was about 8 when this happened. My brother and I were brushing our teeth. Now, Mother Dearest was brushing out her hair in the other room. So our mirror was facing my room. Right across was my room, and on the left was my brother's room. We were brushing our teeth and just messing around. Suddenly, the shower curtains jolted forward like if someone punched them. We didn't think much of it, until a cup from my room hit me in the back of my head. I ran out screaming and choked on my toothbrush. That night, I woke up at 3 a.m. and saw a woman's face over me. I freaked out. Thanks for listening. Love, Podcast.
All right, Love, Podcast. And he submitted his story through the website, which is at True Scary Stories with Edie. I think this is the first time someone submitted a story through the website, right?
No, but it's the first time we've said it.
Oh, okay. So if you wanted to do that, you can do it on our website at True Scary Stories with Edie, or you can do it on the Facebook group, facebook.com/True Scary Stories with Edie, or you can do it on the Instagram at True Scary Stories with Edie. And guess what? You're listening to the True Scary Stories with Edie podcast. This is the podcast where two comedians read scary stories submitted to us by our fans, the Uglies, and some we scour the internet for. This podcast does have commentary, so if you're not into a little commentary after every story, this might not be the podcast for you. But Just the Terror, our other podcast that comes out Sundays, is for you. No talking, all terror.
Yeah.
All right, so this just sounds like your classic once-in-a-lifetime, something-creepy-happened story, right?
Yeah, I think they just wanted to inform us of what happened, nothing
right,
more.
Right, because it's kind of like, well, I want to know that, kind of, you can't really talk about this kind of stuff with people. You know, there's not a lot of people who would understand it, but luckily his brother was there, and he was bared witness to what was going on.
Yeah.
I wonder if the thing really was in the shower, or if it was maybe, you know, a lot of people have windows in their showers.
Oh.
Or windows in their bathroom to let out the steam. So I wonder if a gust of wind maybe blew through.
Well, a gust of wind and somebody punching a shower is very different.
You're right.
I could never imagine a gust of wind.
And a gust of wind punching. And some old lady looking at you in your sleep is a little different.
Yeah. unless the shower curtain has a vendetta and became the old woman and, you know, punched. So it might be just the shower curtain.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for submitting that story. I hope that it was a once in a lifetime occurrence. But, I mean, who knows? The old lady could still be there. You're just too old to see her now.
Yeah.
But hopefully not. Hopefully everything has moved on and you're all good. All right, so this next story is called A Drinking Question, and it is submitted to us by Jazzeree.
Just a question. Is it possible for a ghost or some sort of entity to drink physical liquids? My girlfriend and I are on a mini getaway. We noticed one of our cider was half as though someone drank from it. The lid was still on, but loose. When I cooked breakfast this morning, it was still full. I didn't drink from it, neither did she. We thought maybe someone came into our Airbnb when we were out, which is illegal and weird, but nothing went missing. It's just that bottle of cider that was drank from. Thinking of contacting the owner, but I thought maybe you guys might know if a ghost also liked to get drunk. Thanks, Uglies, Edie and Nick.
Oh, an alcoholic beverage. I thought he was just talking about, like, Martinelli cider. I don't know. It might do it just to mess with you. Especially since you're in a Airbnb, this isn't your house. And so maybe it's sitting there like, hey, who are these people? But also, I would take into consideration the temperature of your vacationing spot, if it's a very dry place, humid or anything like that, because water does get evaporated, or liquids do get evaporated into the atmosphere, clouds, all that kinds of stuff. So it could just be that, depending on where you are or vacationing. But what do you think, Nick?
Well, we've talked about the idea that can a spirit drink a water. We've had this with another story where one of our fans left out a cup of water near a past relative's
right.
picture, and it looked like it was drank. Yeah, so it could be evaporation. But, you know, can a ghost drink something? Well, in the end, water is also a different form of energy and molecules, and that's what spirits are. And so, yes, it is possible that if you believe in spirits that, yeah, they can drink water, because water is just another part of what makes up this world.
Right. I remember the story you're talking about. It was that the belief was, the superstition or belief was that you leave water out, so because it's like you're the spirit that had just passed away is having a long journey to the other, where it's going to end up. So you leave water out for your loved ones after they pass away, and then they drink it to say like, hey, I've made it to the other side. I'm okay.
Yeah.
And thank you for the water. Just kind of, I guess, like a last sign of respect. So yeah, I think depending, it could definitely be. My first suspicion, though, I would think that creepy owners watching.
That's what I would think, too.
Videotaping everything and drinking out of your cups and all of that. That would be my first suspicion.
You know, owner's non-compliant son comes in and is like, oh, I'm going to drink this water or this cider and head on out.
Dang,
you know?
Not non-compliant son.
Yeah.
That sounds like you just unlocked a character in a video game.
Well, you know, like
non-compliant.
I'm not going to follow your Airbnb rules.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
No, that's it for this
All
one.
All right. Let's get into
it. One more story.
Oh, when I said anything else, that was when you would say.
Well, I did tell you before this three stories.
All right. So this next one is called They Saw an Evil Spirit, and it's submitted to us by Nick.
Hi, I saw a post in the Facebook group a few days ago asking if anyone knew someone who had had an exorcism. Below was a comment saying who would comment if they did. And they're right. Well, I have had an exorcism, if you want to call it that. I figured that I would share my story, backstory. I was raised in a church from the time I was about 5. This church has actually grown over the years to have churches in about 10 states and a few other countries. I no longer attend this church, but at the time of the story, I did. I was about 25 at the time. I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where one of the assemblies was located at the time. While in a counseling session with one of the pastors, they looked at me and said, I think that you have an evil spirit. I was shocked. I was taught that such things existed aren't in the Bible, and now I had one? They asked me to come back a week or so later, a few hours before service, to meet with some other ministers from one of the larger assemblies from another state. I knew these men. I knew that they had a reputation for dealing with evil spirits and getting them out of someone's home. The ministers talked with me for a few minutes. They said that they could see my expression change as they were talking to me. They could see that I had an evil spirit inside of me. They told me they would pray with me, that the things they would say were not directed to me, but to the spirit. They began to speak sternly and to rebuke the spirit, telling it to leave my body. I began to feel sick while I was feeling fine before. After a minute, I began to vomit. They said that this was normal and to let it all out. After, I felt a little lighter. I've not talked to anyone about this since it's happened. Keep up the good work. Love listening to the podcast.
So then what? You were just fine after that forever?
Well, you know, when he sent this story, he's thought, you know, can I share it? I was like, yeah, sure. It sounds interesting. Because the truth is that what we see in movies and television as exorcisms are like a glorified, exaggerated version where people are floating and their necks are turning around. Sometimes people can be possessed by evil spirits, and it's mild. You don't really see it, but it's there. There was that one documentary where it was the priest that was helping cleanse this woman of evil spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she just lived her normal life, and the cleansing happened in like 6 sessions over the years. So it was like, yeah, she was fine walking around. It was only when she was in these sessions that the spirit would kind of,
right, because then it had a reason
itself
to fight.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I guess when we think of exorcisms, we think of the exorcist. We think of crazy out of hand stuff. But I bet there's different kinds of exorcisms, just like there's different kinds of sicknesses people have. Some are more violent. Some are more in depth. Some are a harder toll on people than others.
Yes.
I mean, you might have, you know, like a little demon.
That's a small case of the demons. A case of the demons. And
I just have a small case of the demon.
Yeah, that's it. I'm just feeling a little evil.
I'm just feeling a little bit under the earth, like in hell. what would be a good one? Some under the weather. I'm just feeling a bit under
the angel,
the devil.
Oh man.
All right, sorry.
So you know, I asked if I could share the story, and I wanted to share it just to point out that, you know, yeah, it can be very you don't know that you're possessed.
Right. It can be very mild. A touch of the demon. A
touch of the demon.
No, do you need an exorcist? Oh, I just have a touch of the demon.
Yeah.
Just a little sniffle of demon.
And it's interesting that the pastors or the minister was able to see the expression change, you know?
See, which, that for me, I would be like, if they were like, you have a demon, I would be like, I don't think so. They're like, no, I don't think so. That's just me.
Yeah.
I don't think so. That's just me. But yeah, I don't know if I would trust them because I'd be like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And so that makes me kind of wonder if that's even, I don't know. Is that something they can just do like with accuracy or are they just making it up?
Well, obviously they did it. And he threw up and he felt better.
Okay, good. That happened to me once when I ate some bad Taco Bell, so. All right, let's keep going. All right, on today's topic, we are going to be talking about Strange, Strange World. Well, duh, this is a strange, strange world, especially right now. It's really, really windy and spooky outside. And there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world. A lot of strange occurrences.
Yes.
So let's get into it. The first story is called The Day of the Disappearances. And it comes to us from Mirian of Oz.
Hi, I'm from Italy. I've had strange things happen to me often. But this happened yesterday to my sister. And she's still freaked out. Due to the pandemic, she's working at home. Every midday, she heads to our parents' house to take the family dog, Jazz, out for a walk. Yesterday when she went, there was no Jazz. He was nowhere to be found. Our dad was grocery shopping. Our mom was in the kitchen. When my sister asked her if Jazz was with our father, our mother asked her, "Who's Jazz?" Long story short, there was no dog. My mom had reminded my sister that after the death of our first dog, we didn't take another. My sister, thinking this was a strange prank, which is not typical of our parents, they're not pranksters and they are in their 80s, she searched the house. She couldn't find anything suggesting the presence of a dog. No dog food, no dog bed, no dog toys, which he has plenty and are always everywhere. Then our dad came home, still no dog. When my sister interrogated him, he started to think that she was the one who was joking. At the same time, from the kitchen TV, she heard the news reporter talking about the end of the pandemic and the surge of something she couldn't understand. This morning, she said to me that the reporter didn't seem very preoccupied for the surge of whatever it was because something she didn't recognize would take care of it. She was very agitated, and she thinks that may have been why she didn't understand what the reporter was talking about. After that, she returned home. She didn't want our parents to see her while she was freaking out. She tried to call me because while she is indifferent to these kinds of events, she knows I'm a believer. She wanted me to help her try to understand what was happening. But I was nowhere to be found. My cell phone was inactive. She couldn't even reach the shop where I work. They simply didn't answer the phone, which is quite improbable because except for when it's closed, for us to answer the phone is mandatory. She tried with some of my friends too, with no success. After that, she went to bed and cried until she fell asleep. This morning, I found 16 calls from her with today's date. I called her back, worried that something happened. She was crying, still very agitated. She went straight to our parents' house and took Jazz to her home because she wanted to spend the night with the dog. She also confessed to me that yesterday, the day that I was nowhere to be found, she couldn't muster the courage to call our parents or relatives and ask about me. She was too scared they would tell her that she was an only child. At the moment, she doesn't want to talk about it anymore. Obviously, I keep asking myself, what was it? So I tried bringing it up with my parents. I asked them about my sister's visit the previous day. My parents told me that they didn't see her at all. In fact, they tried to call her at midday for the dog, but her phone was mute. They concluded that maybe she was busy. They thought it was strange, but they didn't investigate. This is all. I keep wondering where Jazz and I were and what the news was talking about. Maybe my sister was in another universe. She's still too freaked out to talk about it.
Wow. Nick, I'll let you go first. Go ahead.
I mean, we've talked about, you know, people slipping into, you know, another timeline and things like that. We had that story last week of the guy that ended up at the train station. You know, and when I read the comments, it said things like, oh, man, that train did open around the 18, blah, blah, blah. People were filling it in. So, you know, I mean, if you believe in alternate timelines that exist with ours, there is a chance that there is a whole nother world where your brothers and sisters don't exist, things you know don't exist, You know, where what we're going through in the world is very different depending on what that timeline had. It just depends on what you believe.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of people who believe that before, what, like basically like sometime in 2016, 2017, that we went into a like black hole alternate timeline, and that we are now living in a like different universe, basically like a parallel dimension. Like we switched into something else because of how different, I guess, things started getting in like that era, like 2017-ish. That it does seem like a completely different world now than at that point. Or I've even heard people say they think that we went into a black hole. That, you know, there's like many black holes that we've been tracking, and then some of them like disappeared and they can't find them. And it's like, are we in it? So I think this is completely plausible. I think we have no idea about these parallel universes, and it would be just stupid to say that they don't ever intersect with us. They have no effect on us.
There, along with the idea of going into a black hole, a lot of people thought when they turned on the Hadron Collider that that may have pushed the Earth into a different timeline. But what I say to all that is that you are in the timeline that you're in, and I don't know if
So
this
give
is,
up on the other timelines.
like the idea of like an alternate timeline, and did we slip into it? Well, no, we're in our timeline, whatever it may be. This is what we are in. So, it's wild. I mean, I don't say it's out of the realm of possibility, but I don't have an explanation for this, you
Right.
know?
Yeah, and I mean, we're experts, we're not that good though.
Yeah, well, who is, you know?
We're not
Who's gonna be that good to figure
that
out alternate dimensions with proof?
Yeah.
You know,
Well, yeah, there's people who are working on it.
there's that whole website that I've been.
I thought they did for sure figure out there were parallel dimensions
Well,
and
it's
stuff like
all
that.
theory. Everything in science is a theory. I don't think they figured it out for sure. But there is that website where supposedly there's a guy slipped into an alternate timeline where the Beatles never broke up, and they recorded a whole nother album that we didn't get, and he
Oh
actually brought it
man.
back.
We live in the worst timeline.
And I've been meaning to go to that website because it's no longer on the internet. You have to like go find the
Dang.
archive of it and listen to the songs and see if it really sounds like a Beatles album.
Yeah, or it's some guy just like promoting his band that's like a Beatles covers band. All right, cool. Well, I definitely want to hear it. Let's keep going. Dressed to Scare, written by Miranda Mandarin.
When I was about 7 years old, I was sitting in my bedroom with my friend Celia. We were playing and building stuff with Legos. It was late afternoon, and our parents were outside the front of the house chatting. My bedroom had a window at the side of the house. At some point while we were playing, I looked up and saw something on the other side of the window. I have no idea how to describe this thing. I haven't heard anyone else mention anything that sounded similar. From the neck down, it looked like a person. I can't remember what it was wearing, but I think it was dressed in a dark blazer. The collar was visible, so I know it was facing us. From the neck up, everything started to look very wrong. Its head was heart-shaped. Its skin was brown and leathery, like the hide of an animal, but it was slightly translucent. Beneath the leathery skin, I could see thick, pulsing black and dark blue veins. There was no face. I remember looking at this thing for a moment, and it was like my brain had fuzzed over being scared. I remember thinking something like, no, that's not meant to be there. That's not what a person looks like. And I remember mostly feeling surprised more than scared. I don't really think I thought it was real. I slowly turned my head to look at Celia, and she was doing the same, turning her head to look at me. I saw her wide eyes and her mouth hanging open as I realized we could both see this thing. The fear clicked in. I thought, it's not a person. What is that thing? That's not a person. I remember being paralyzed with shock and fear. I wanted to bolt, but I couldn't move. I suddenly felt really sick, like the room was blurry and spinning. I don't remember the thing walking away, but one moment it was there, and the next it was gone. Sally and I both stood up wordlessly and walked solemnly outside. I remember feeling unnaturally cold, wobbly, and fragile, and a little bit too thin, like you do when you're coming down with the flu. We walked to the front of the house. and we each grabbed onto a parent and snuggled into them until they finished their conversation. Sally and I never talked about it.
Wow, not even to this day?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man, a lot of these people, like, it really pains me when they don't discuss it, because it's like you have to confirm these things with each other, because as you get older, you lose the memory and things like become, you have to kind of fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
And so you create kind of like false memories. But if you talk about it right away, it's more going to be cemented in your mind. Nick, what do you think they saw?
Well, I mean, do you want it cemented in your mind? Do you want to remember a weird thing?
For purposes of telling other people, yes. Yeah. If I was going to write it down in Reddit and tell other people or write it into True Scary Stories, yes, I would like to remember it.
Yeah, well, I mean, at she was seven, we didn't exist.
I'm going to need to write this down for True Scary Stories.
One day. How do I know that? Oh, no, I slipped into an alternate dimension. I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, we hear about cryptids and how they hypnotize you with fear and spirits. I mean, who knows what this thing is? We're never going to know. It's just a scary story.
Right. And it's probably something that you could see because you were so young and you were able to accept it. And not, you know, your mind not just be like, no. But even her mind tried to be like, no.
Yep.
For a second there. I have no idea what it was. Honestly, it sounds like something completely I've never heard of before.
It's just scary.
The description was, yeah. Like, sounds like a, I don't know. I have no idea. Never heard of it. All right. Well, let's keep going. Just Bad News, written by Random Studman.
I used to live in Vancouver, Washington, on a cul-de-sac, Orchard Dell Court. It was T-shaped cul-de-sac with another road going off of the side of the T. At 8 a.m. that morning, I was heading to school. I only had to walk about a block from my house to where the cul-de-sac meets the main road, St. James Road. This is my typical everyday route. However, that morning was different. When I got close to St. James, I looked up from my feet. Across the road was what I can only describe as a creature. It was made up entirely of black spheres, in the shape of a man. It definitely had two legs, two arms, a torso, and a head, but again, all made up of black spheres about a foot wide, a little bigger than a basketball. All of the spheres had a texture to them that I'd never seen before. That is creepy enough, but it was dancing around a pole across the street. This thing projected nothing but pure malevolence. I felt that this thing was bad, really, really bad. And I would not say it was evil, it was just bad. It's like the difference between saying a man can be evil, but a man can also be good. This thing could not have the possibility of being good. There's no way. It was bad through and through. When I looked at it, it stopped dancing. It looked at me and just popped out of existence. Did not fade, did not make any sound. It was there one moment, the next moment it was gone. I was very freaked out, but it's not like I was hurt or felt bad, just freaked out. I went to school like normal, if not a little shaken. Well, that night, there were some kids racing cars drunk. They crashed. The reports were that four or five people were killed. The driver and all the passengers all died instantly. The crash happened at the corner near my house. My father wanted to be nosy and go see the corner. He even took me. Neighborhoods are just full of nosy people. When I went out with my father to the corner where it happened, I was shocked. It was the exact same intersection where I saw that thing the previous morning. I cannot help but think I saw something strange that morning, something I was not supposed to see. Whatever that creature was, it was bad, bad news.
All right. The thing dancing on the pole, weird street corner, that happened to me once in Vegas.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there was a scary stripper dancing.
Oh, man.
In a corner in Vegas. And let me tell you, some bad things happened after, okay?
No, no.
So this thing was like an emblem of bad bad luck. I mean, there's been lots of stories like this. Like even the Mothman, it's people see him as an omen of a tragedy coming up.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the realm of possibilities to think that this thing was an omen that something bad was about to happen. The creature itself sounds much different than any creature we've talked about.
Yeah.
Sounds a little bit jolly, right?
I mean, I guess because it was dancing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, no. Other than it dancing, yeah, like, it's like, I like evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, when he was like doing the whip and the nay nay.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, this is where some bad stuff's gonna happen, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder what kind of dance it was, and if it was even dancing, or this guy was like, that's dancing, but if we saw it, it'd be like, no, that's convulsing.
Yeah. Well,
what are you talking about? That's how I dance.
With the music these days.
Yeah. He saw a demon shooting a TikTok.
Yeah.
He was just there dancing at a street corner.
I'm a savage. Yeah. Classy, bougie, ratchet.
Yeah, evil, scary.
What's happening?
So it's just wild. It's a strange, strange world. That's why that's this episode.
I gotcha. Let's keep going. Two crazy stories from my hometown.
A lot of small towns have crazy stories, or at least the one I grew up in did. Here's two. There was a woman who was an RN. Her family lived in a nice farmhouse on the outskirts of town. Well, her husband had died in the house. No clear reason why. And why is it that way, you ask? Because she kept up the charade that he was alive for 8 years. She just kept her dead husband in the house for 8 years with their children. She convinced them that daddy was in a diabetic coma. She even brought him out to the dinner table and everything. The kids didn't even think to question why daddy didn't poop or eat for 8 years. My aunt bought their farmhouse for a great low price. Crazy story number two. A married woman was reported by her husband missing. All the family had as evidence was her purse was still at home. I went to school with her teenage kids. They kept asking their father where mom was. They were told that she got mad and left. The oldest son knew something was wrong and kept asking questions, but never got the answer he was looking for. Well, one day, the dad was spending quality time in the basement. The oldest son looked into the basement from the outside into its window, careful to not be seen by his dad. The oldest son then saw parts of his mom. He went to the police. The police immediately started inquiring more than from the father. Come to find out, the father killed the mother, chopped her up with a blender, and buried her in the backyard. And then he took the blender back to Sears for a refund because it wasn't working properly. There were bone fragments, blood, and hair lodged into the motor. So, there's my crazy small-town stories.
Whoa, what? Okay, both of those stories, for some reason, were eerily similar.
Yeah, very. Well, people in small towns, man, you're surprised at how many marriages in small towns were just like, we know each other, you know?
And then, end in a blender?
End in a blender. They just go crazy, you know?
Okay. Okay, so the first story... seemed like the mom just didn't want to break it to her kids, and yeah. She was sad or whatever. Okay. That one, it's very weird, but whatever. The second story, how did he chopped her up with a blender? Death by blender? What kind of blender does that?
Well, I'm guessing what it really was, you know, because, of course, I had to, like, fix this story in the sense of, like, this person had bad grammar.
Mm-hmm.
The dad was chopping up his wife and then using the blender to try to, like, pulverizer, and probably soon figured out that you can't do that with just a blender, you know, like that it's
right.
Not made for that,
you know. Like, have you ever seen those commercials where they're like, you can make your own peanut butter, just put peanuts? Now he was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he probably saw a commercial, and they claim a lot in those commercials where it's like,
no,
look at everything that we can cut up, an aluminum can, you
no
know? And so he probably was like, oh, my wife's not aluminum, so this is easy. She's like a pomegranate at best.
Okay, so yeah, that one. Then I'm surprised Sears didn't catch on when he was returning it. Like, yo, there's like blood and hair and stuff.
It's so wild that he tried to return
did
it.
Did it?
People are so
but it didn't
crazy
work, right?
No, it didn't work.
And they were like, oh, sorry, you don't have the receipt.
Yeah, of course. They're like, sorry, this is obviously used.
Yeah, all right. Wow. I think, yeah, the second one definitely really terrible. The first one, just sad.
Yeah.
But eerily similar.
Yes.
And these are the same town. And you know what that town was?
What?
Fresno.
Oh.
Fresno, California.
Yep. Small towns don't ask questions.
A scented warning. Written by... JSilly93.
I worked the graveyard shifts in the North Carolina mountains. Working these dark hours kind of leaves limited things to occupy my time on my days off. Normally, I just go out driving or hiking, walking in the dark, if I don't have a video game I want to play or a movie I want to watch. With this hobby, I often come across unusual things in the darkness. I've experienced things that I can't forget, or hear things when I'm alone that make me want to faint. They all range from normal scary to downright terrifying paranormal. This happened about 2 weeks ago. I've been scared to talk about it because every time I do, when the dark comes, there's always a noise or a bad feeling that comes to me and whoever I'm around. Well, it was my night off. I was getting kind of bored with laying around watching YouTube while my fella slept. So, like most weekends, I decided to go out for a drive. It's about 1 a.m. and cloudless. I head up to the parkway like normal. It's bound to be a beautiful drive. Nope, it's closed. Well, dang, where do I go now, I think. Oh, Pisgah Forest. I haven't been there since high school. Perfect, an adventure. And I drive. At about 3 a.m., I get to the entrance of the forest. It's looking pretty foreboding. Now, the entrance is smack dab in the middle of tourist haven, two being ice cream and souvenir shops, all brightly lit parking lots and cute signs. But the forest entrance is completely the opposite. It's a long, straight road with absolutely no lights disappearing into the night. Only campers go up there after dark. I didn't think much of it. It's nighttime. Of course it looks pretty scary. Everything looks scary in the dark. And up I drive. Everything is pretty normal for a while. I pass by turnoffs for picnics and campgrounds, all dark. But the higher I climb up the mountain, the more anxious I feel. Something isn't right. I'm normally fine in the night. It's my time. But something just feels off. I kept pushing on. The winding road climbs higher and higher. Forest is all around me, thick and serene. The air is warm, smells good and musty. The only light around is from my headlights. But I can't shake this bad feeling. I try to ignore it, thinking maybe it's because I can't see the moon, like when I go on the parkway. Yeah, that's it. That's gotta be it. But as the climb gets steeper, the more scared I get. My chest is tight and becoming painful, but I keep going. I'm just trying to ignore it. I'm passing the waterfalls, hearing the water roaring out of sight. I should be relaxing, but I can't. After about an hour and a half, I notice the turnoffs are few and far between. I haven't passed any in a while. The pain in my chest is alarming me. I'm considering heading back down. Suddenly, I smell something unusual. You ever remember being little and your parents having that particular smell that you remember, like a perfume or cologne that they might wear that you immediately recognize into your adult years as them? Well, my dad was a factory worker and a smoker, so from a young age, he always smelled like motor oil, harsh metal, coffee, and cigarettes. An odd combination, but it's him. And that's the smell I smelt. In the middle of the woods, with nothing but trees and clean air around, I smelt my dad. It was subtle, but I got the hint. I need to turn my butt around and go home now. I drove onwards till I found a safe place I could do a K-turn. Around a tight turn, I found a good spot away from the guardrails and initiate the maneuver. Right as I got my car straightened back out, I stopped dead. The smell of rot had flooded through my open window, and there, inches from my front bumper, was a creature. It was crouched down, looking at the dirt. The body, it wasn't right. It looked like a big hairy dog crouching on all fours, but the legs, they were too long to be a normal dog. My eyes moved up to its head. A human head. Long dark hair covering a face I couldn't see, but its eyes, I could see them, and they met mine. Red, orange, glowing back at me. My heart felt like it was going to stop, and tears started filling my eyes. I hadn't been this scared in my whole life. My heart felt like it was going to stop. The smell was horrible. It was suffocating. The creature started to move, and I don't know what happened. It was like my body flipped as a switch. I still wasn't thinking anymore. I didn't feel anything. I just stomped on the gas pedal, veered around the creature, and sped off down the mountain. I feel like I should have clipped it with my car. It was so close. But I don't remember recognizing that I connected with anything. I don't remember anything until my phone rang, long after I left the forest. It was my twin. She felt something was wrong and had been trying to get a hold of me for half an hour. I drove to her house and explained the whole thing, waiting for the sun to come up. This has been one of the most terrifying experiences that happened to me, alone so far. And every time I tell someone about it, something unexplained happens. When I told my twin, that night she heard some banging on her closet door, when no one or nothing was inside it. When I told my parents, my mom saw some red eyes in the woods when she went outside to smoke. When I told my fella the next morning, we both heard a crash outside. But when we looked, there was nothing amiss. Then, when I was leaning beside the window, I saw the curtain move in one spot. I felt a breath behind me. We are on the second floor. I flipped and hid on the other side of the room till morning. I don't know if it's the same creature and it somehow followed me across counties or something else, warning me to not to talk about it. I still go out driving at night and it's actually my night off now, but I think I'll just stay home tonight. Play it safe.
All right. What a great story. I love this one. First thing, sounds like a dogman, which we've done two episodes on now.
Yeah.
Either dogman or skinwalker. Where did she say this was?
The North Carolina mountains.
Sounds about right to me.
Yep.
But yeah, that definitely sounds like a dogman. We've covered it a lot, especially when you talk about the glowing eyes. That's one of the very, very core look of it. That's what we know it as a dogman is because the glowing eyes, usually a yellow or red glowing eyes,
yeah,
is often described. In fact, I think like in every story in the episodes we've done, it talks about the eyes,
yeah,
the glowing eyes, especially since this was in the forest as well. We know that's where they like to hang out. That's like pretty much the only place where the dogman is spotted is in the forests. Yeah, so sounds about right to me. The part about her dad, the smell of her dad is really interesting because it's like the smell of the rot and everything like that followed right afterwards. And I wonder if it was actually her dad's smell or if it was a lure because of how we know that these types of entities like to lure you into a certain area.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Did she say her father was passed?
No, she didn't say that.
Oh.
Yeah, she just said she talked to her mom. Mm. Maybe it was a warning. Like, if the father is passed away or whatever, maybe protecting her. It's like, if I hit her with this smell, she will know, uh-oh.
Well, she did. She said that was how she knew to turn around. But if her father's not passed, then maybe a different relative who knows that would do the trick.
Yeah,
but it also just kind of sounds like if her father's not passed, that it could have been an enticement from this thing.
Yeah,
because the other smell followed, and it seemed like this thing was regulating those smells.
Yeah,
it made the second smell, so why it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities for it to make the first smell.
Yeah, well, I think the father was passed away. I'm pretty sure that'd
be a pretty important detail.
The craziest thing was how the twin felt it too.
Right. I forgot the twin. This had a lot of different. I forgot about the twin.
Yeah.
The twin thing. Now, she just told us that this story, and she just said everyone she told the story to had a scary thing happen.
Yeah.
And we just heard it. So,
well,
hopefully it doesn't happen to us.
I think it was her telling the story. You know, a big thing with some ideas of cryptids and the myth of cryptids, especially skinwalkers or wendigos, you're not supposed to talk about them. You know, because then you're inviting them. It's just like with anything.
Well,
so
hopefully we don't.
Well, I've always been scared. Every time I walk out of the house, I'm like, you know, I've talked so much. I'm just waiting for all of them to show up one day. Like, hey, we're here. Bigfoot, Dogman.
Sorry, we just needed to carpool.
Yeah.
We don't have a car. Sasquatch is the only one with a car.
Yeah. We're just waiting for you to say everybody. Zozo.
All right. All right. Let's keep going. Good Old Blue, written by Observed Oddities.
When my best friend and I were about 13 or 14 years old, we were running around in his backyard, playing in the late afternoon hours. His property was 1 or 2 acres. It was more of a narrow strip with a very long front yard and a very long backyard. The trees around it were super tall pines, so we could see a great distance away with no lower branches or leaves in the way. We made our way around the outskirts of the yards until we saw something on the far edge of the property. It moved quickly. We couldn't tell what it was. Feeling adventurous, we sprinted ahead until we reached an old wooden fence that surrounded his property. We looked out into an old lot with red clay and tufts of tall gray weeds everywhere. I told my buddy that it was probably a squirrel or a low-flying bird that we saw. Then he silently jerked the shoulder of my sleeve. I had never seen this expression on his face before. He stared away from me and into the lot ahead. I froze in fear of his reaction. I slowly looked out into the abandoned lot. It was like seeing something out of the corner of your eye. Blurry, but yet distinct. The form of a ruddy red dog appeared to burst from nowhere at full speed, visible for only a few swift bounds before it disappeared. The figure did not slow down, nor duck behind a tree, as there was nothing there to really obstruct our view. We saw this happen a couple of times. the blurry form of a dog at full gait appearing from nowhere. It looked as if frames of a movie had been cut, then just suddenly disappear with no trace. The whole thing had to have been 10 seconds at most, but there was no sound whatsoever, and no dust stirred up from the commotion. We slowly climbed over the fence, keeping a steady eye ahead, looking for dangers or the sign of any other movement. We both stopped simultaneously at the place we had seen the dog sprinting, but there were no paw marks in the dusty old red clay dirt. Our tennis shoes left a mark. My friend's hand left a mark as he brushed along the ground, but there was no trace of anything, much less a dog, having passed through there. We sprinted back inside his house. His mother was engaged on the phone and not interested in our tall tales, so we decided to keep hush about it until we could determine if it really was just a shared, imaginary moment or not. Although he and I were not really prone to flights of fancy such as this, about a week later he called me. He told me something that chilled me to the bone. Apparently, he was walking to the neighbor's house down the road to drop off some things they had asked to borrow. He typically just minded his business and kept quiet. But just before departing the neighbor's front porch, while everyone was saying their goodbyes, my friend asked the neighbors a question. "Do you happen to have a dog?" They said no, that they had an indoor cat, but no dogs. When they asked him why he was wanting to know, he told them what he had seen. My friend's mother began to sort of swat at him, saying he shouldn't be goofing around and telling stories. But she stopped when she saw the serious look on the older gentleman's face. He said, "No, ma'am. Let him tell it." My friend told the story over again. The man replied, "Oh yes, I've seen him. He's my father's old hunting dog, good old Blue. Blue died in a barn fire 40 or 50 years ago. It was on that property that spans around behind y'all's place. We've seen him a few times now over the years, more since that land's been cleared out a bit. I tried calling out for him, but he never came when I called. Yelling, 'Here, Blue, here, Blue!' Maybe if you tried, he'll stop and come over to you." We never saw good old Blue again, although we spent the next few weeks looking, watching, and calling, "Here, Blue! Here, Blue!"
I love that story. Okay, I thought this was going to be like another dog man thing, but this is just the ghost or just an old man with a really good ability to think on his feet.
Just play along with the kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's our dog. Yeah, it's either one or the two, but okay, so I thought they were getting like an evil vibe from it, but I guess not. It was just a crazy thing to see, but not like an evil thing to see. Wow. And then that begs the question, are all of our dogs running around somewhere as ghosts?
Well, you know, I mean, it dying in a fire is obviously a traumatic experience. So, you know, trauma is usually why any kind of spirit sticks around.
Right.
So, and I think, I don't know if we've talked about dog spirits before, but, you know, we have had stories where it's very possible, you know?
Yes, I agree. And then another part I really liked about the story, we were not partial to flights of fancy.
Yeah, this is a good old country, a bunch of stuff.
We were not partial. No, that's mighty proper. We
He's
are not
full
partial.
Speed out the gate. Running.
All right, let's keep going.
Hey, Edie, you know how we talk about scary things.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but sometimes the scariest things are personal struggles that we're afraid to talk about. But talking it out is always the beginning to overcoming. And sometimes it helps to hear others talk openly about their struggles. So I'm here to tell you, Edie Gibson, and Uglies, about a podcast that does just that. The Choose Your Struggle podcast, hosted by Jay Schiffman.
Wait, is this an ad?
Kind of. You know, I'm trying to do it casually. Jay's on a mission to help end the stigma that comes along with mental health issues, substance misuse, and recovery. He interviews people that not only have lived the experiences, but some that also understand our country's drug policies, and he wants to handle these difficult topics with empathy and vulnerability. It starts there, but we all don't know the perfect way to start, so that's where Jay wants to help. And as we say on this podcast, it's always good to know how to speak up about bad situations. So go check out his podcast, Choose Your Struggle. You can hear him, his personal stories, and even discover other stories through the guests he has on there. Choose Your Struggle. Let's open up, because in the end, we're in this together.
That sounds like a great podcast.
It is.
Five-Day River Trip, written by Yeah, Not Quiet.
This happened in 1998. Myself and six friends, aged 18 to 28, mixed European group, went on a trip around Mérida in Venezuela. It was going to be a five-day river canoe trip up a tributary of the Orinoco. Our guides were an older, 60s, rough-looking German guy and a slightly younger but shifty-looking Orinoco Basin Indian. One person in our group knew fluent German, but for some unexplained reason didn't share with the guide that she could speak it. She later told us she didn't want the creepy dude making comments to her that no one else could understand. We were 3 days in, roughing it in hammocks on the side of the river, not having seen a village for at least 8 hours. Each night after dinner, the guides would kind of keep to themselves, which was fine, actually. But this evening, they were a bit further away. We could tell they were having a pretty heated discussion in a mix of German and local dialect. Suddenly, the German girl in the group turns white and looks terrified. It takes us a few minutes to calm her down. She explains she heard the German guy talk about making sure the others will be at the place and they will have the guns, and that the crocodiles will get rid of the guys and the girls will all go with them to some village the day after next. We all kind of freaked out. We were basically with these two dudes in the middle of a rainforest days from anywhere. We were pretty much trapped. We decided on a plan. We decided that the next time we saw another canoe expedition pass us, we would essentially shout and scream at them that we were being kidnapped and needed help. Fortunately, the next day, a four-person canoe group came past. We enacted our plan. We started screaming for help and saying we were being kidnapped. Our guides immediately just got out of there. They didn't even protest about our crazy accusations or anything. The only thing they did was pull out a sawed-off shotgun from under a blanket and point it at us to stop chasing them. That kind of validated to us that they were planning to kill or traffic us. They didn't hang around to get caught. The group took us to the nearest village. It was a few hours down a branching tributary. When we got there, we explained the situation to the local police and some soldiers that were on an exercise. Turns out there was a suspected serial killer operating out of the Maracaibo area, targeting tourists going into the forest. The killer had been active since 1996. I was never able to corroborate any of the info we were told by the police using any Western media source or internet searches. We still occasionally email each other about our close call, but it's been 20 years and, well, we moved on with our lives. I never told my family or my wife. I don't think anyone else in the group has ever told more than a handful of people.
Wow, you've never told your wife or your family? That's crazy. And that's definitely one of the true horror stories. That is, that kind of stuff happens. And that is actually, like, I feel like one of the most scary stories because you know that it's true.
Yeah.
That happens.
And this is 98. So it's still like, you know, cell phones still weren't really completely around. And, you know, so
in 98, yeah, definitely not around.
You know, I mean, you had to like be rich and really have it. People still rocking beepers.
Hey, hey, we need help. Beep, 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 beep. And Morse code. All right, let's keep going. All right, we are on to the last story. Before we get to it, don't forget to join us on Facebook, Instagram, and the website at True Scary Stories with Edie. Share your scary story with us. We'd love to read it. And if you don't want to, you just go on and hang out with us. We post some really cool stuff. Well, the Uglies post some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
We just mostly reply. Nick has his album. Right?
Oh, yeah. Love Me at My Worst. You can listen to it on all streaming services.
All right. All streaming services. Love Me at My Worst. You get to hear Nick do stand up and support him. We'd really appreciate it.
Yep.
Also, after this, don't forget to give us 5 stars. And anything else?
I'll be in Iowa this Saturday for one night.
Oh, Iowa.
Yeah. I mean, unless the freezing cold stops all flights.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right, so our last story is called A Beautiful Nightmare, and it is written by Guy81.
Hello, my name is Dalton, and this is a memory I think I need to tell. It has sat with me for a long time. I don't wish this to happen to anyone. Now, a little bit about me. I've lived in a cemetery. I've experienced a wide variety of paranormal or unusual things. I can handle weird things. They don't usually bother me as much as it would a normal person, but none of those could compare to this. Here are the events that took place in late March of 2013. March 12th. My friend Cody, 19, Cameron, 15, and I, 16, had all been hanging out the last few days. We decided that we should go camping and invite some girls to hang with us. Find a remote place, swim, and drink. Have a little party for the weekend. We've all camped out before. We've all camped way out in the forest. So we were definitely experienced when it came to camping. Cody, being an aspiring survivalist, was really good at finding food and making shelter. The plan was us boys would be dropped off for days. The girls would drive over for a night or two. Then we'd be picked up by Cody's parents when we were done with camping. At that time, we had little to no worries about anything. Not to mention, all of us were dropouts. We didn't have school to worry about, so all we had to do was enjoy life. The plans were made. We borrowed two tents from Cody's parents. We'd asked his parents for suggestions on a really secluded place, one deep in the woods, but near water. They named a few places. We weren't really interested in any that they suggested, until Cody's mom had said, "Hey, hon, what about over there off the slaughterhouse road?" At that point, Cody's dad had said, "No, they can't go there. It's too far away. And you remember how it's really odd out there." That piqued our interest immediately. We started asking about this place. He warns us the nearest gas station is almost 30 miles away. We would have to head down an old highway, then turn on a dirt road and drive 20 more miles on that road. But there isn't one house halfway down, and the only one that is abandoned. At the end of the road, there's a creek and an abandoned slaughterhouse. We would be surrounded by real thick woods. After some arguing and convincing, he agreed to take us as long as we only stayed till Monday, which would only be 2 days. We agreed. With that in mind, we asked some girls who would have no issue meeting us down there later that night. We got our stuff loaded up in the back of the truck and took off down there. We stopped at the gas station. We got some snacks, beer, and other drinks, and continue on our way. When we get to the road, I looked for a road name. I couldn't see one. It was as if the road was never named, which didn't really strike me as odd at the time. About 10 miles into this road, we come across the abandoned house. I happened to notice there was still a mower and gardening supplies that were in the yard. I took note of that and figured my friends and I could come back and scavenge the area, maybe find something cool to keep. Finally, after what seems like forever, we make it down to the slaughterhouse and riverbed. And it's really pretty. The water is see-through. You can see to the bottom and see fish. The overall landscape was amazing. We can't believe why no one is down there because of how beautiful the scenery is. It should have been a well-known camping spot. But again, we didn't put much thought into it. We figured we just got a whole new spot pretty much to ourselves. We get out, unpack our things, and start exploring. Cody's parents hang back with us. They promise they'll leave before the girls get there. It's about 6 p.m., still daylight. The women are supposed to meet us around 8:30. Cody and I like our beer, so we start drinking and fishing. Cameron, on the other hand, wasn't really a drinker. He was more or less a loner. We pulled him into our little group to pull him out of his shell. Cody and I were pretty popular, we just didn't find big groups fun. We are definitely the outdoorsy type. Cameron was really just there because he enjoyed being with us. 7:30 comes by, the girl calls us, and say that they are heading this way. We tell Cody's parents they can take off. As Cody's dad starts to leave, he calls Cody over. He hands him his .44 revolver. He says, "Last time we were here, we heard a lot of coyotes, so keep this nearby. Use your head while being out here. You're farther away from than you guys are used to." Then he pulls off. We weren't worried about it. We could always call his dad to get us if something weren't to go too wrong. Even though there were barely any signal out here, if you stood on this one big hill, you could get just enough to text or call. We wait to hear from the girls. They say they're almost there. We begin making a fire as the sun was beginning to set. The girls finally arrive. We all start hanging out, drinking, and having an overall good time. Everything was great! 12:30 a.m. rolls around. We're all in separate tents with whatever girl we had got that night. I ended up in the tent with this girl, Savannah. She kept saying she's creeped out and hearing things walking around our tent. I tell her it's probably Cody or Cameron and quit worrying. An hour later, I hear what sounds like footsteps walking around the tent. By this time, Savannah is asleep beside me. So I'm just listening to the steps, kind of slowly prance around, not really concerned. I say, "Still drinking, Cody?" I get no response, so I just keep listening. It dawns on me that there is an extra step for every step, which means it's an animal. After a minute, I come to the conclusion, oh, it's a deer. I call out to Cody, whose tent is 40 feet from mine on the other side of Cameron's. He calls back, asking if I hear it too. As soon as I answered, the animal knocked over a beer can and boom, trots away. Cody and I get out of our tent shortly after and start looking around. We don't really see any tracks. It was like there was nothing outside the tent. When we knew we heard something, the ground was soft too, so we should see tracks. But whatever, you know. We get back in the tent and fall asleep. 3:30 comes around. We hear thunder in the distance. It's from a pop-up storm. All of us are woken up. We're all outside the tents watching the storm roll in. We're hoping it won't get bad because our area was really easy to get bagged real quick, but the storm's just barely moving alongside us. We can see the lightning and hear the thunder, but no rain. After 20 minutes of listening to the storm and chatting, one of the other girls notices something in the woods. It looks like a pair of eyes. We start looking closer and staring. Sure enough, it was a set of eyes. Cody grabs the gun as we watch the eyes watch us. We are all a little on the edge, but don't think it's much more than a dog or other animal that has been in contact with humans. As we're watching them, they all of a sudden slowly stand up to about 6 feet tall. Now we are worried. Cody fires off a warning shot and yells, telling the animal to get out of there. The eyes don't even flinch. Now Cody takes aim and fires again. Slowly, the eyes turn and head back into the woods. We hear this loud crunching from how big this animal is breaking branches as it slowly walks off. We're all still sitting there in mild shock, trying to make sense of what that animal was. Then we hear this very loud, ear-ringing howling coming from the direction of the animal. That freaks the girls out enough for them to say nope. They all pack up and are about to go home. They get in the car and ask if we want to go. We debate on staying or going. We finally just decide to stay and convince ourselves it was just a bear. The girls leave. We go to our individual tents and are just silent. We all knew we were awake, freaked out, and couldn't sleep. 30 minutes later, we just hear things moving and walking around in the woods. Now, it's important to note, when nightfall came, all the wildlife went silent. It was so quiet your ears would ring occasionally, but somehow we all managed to fall asleep. Sunrise came. We woke up and started making breakfast. Now it was daylight. We really weren't freaked out anymore. Cody and I started making jokes about the night before. Cameron was not joking. He was still really scared. After calling him a wimp enough, he finally said that sometime in the night, he awoke to something standing over his tent. He could just hear breathing, really, really deep breathing. We thought he was lying, but left it alone. Cody walked back to where Cameron said he had seen something standing over his tent. Right there were two huge footprints, at least a foot wide and 2 feet long. After that, we kind of didn't speak of it, just kind of ignored it and covered it up so it wouldn't scare Cameron. We went on with our day and finally started having fun again. We decided instead of going home, we would stay another night, despite what happened. Everything was fine the rest of the day. Then the night came. We were almost ready to lay down when Cody points out the obvious. The woods fell silent at night again. We said, let's just go to sleep as fast as we can, wake up, and get out of here in the morning. We're all on the edge, but somehow managed to go to sleep. Sometime during the night, I was awoken by someone screaming at the top of their lungs. Cody and I jumped out of the tent as fast as we could. Cameron's tent was literally ripped open and thrown 10 feet into the water. Cody grabs his gun. We take off, running, screaming for Cameron and following the screaming. After about 2 miles, we find him running. He was cut up and bleeding with a broken arm. We grab him. We start running as fast as we can along this access road. Behind us in the woods a little way back, we hear something trailing us. Cody fires 2 shots toward it as we're running. We run so far that we made it to the abandoned house. We barricade ourselves inside as Cody is making the phone call to his parents. He finally gets a hold of them. They start rushing towards us, but they're still an hour away. We just hope we make it through that hour. We're scared that this thing is going to bust through the door any minute and kill us all. 30 minutes go by. There's no sign of this creature whatsoever. We keep looking out the windows. We don't see anything. Cameron has yet to say a word since we found him. Then Cody looks out the window. Right out of the woodlands, on the edge of the trees, is the creature's eyes. We all panic. Cody realizes he has only 2 bullets left in the gun. We watch the creature for what seems like forever. Then our worst nightmare happens. It starts running toward the house and walking around it, banging on the walls and windows. We never could get a clear glimpse of what this thing was. I'm actually very happy that I didn't. Finally, we see headlights. The banging stops. His dad gets out and starts firing an AR-15 repeatedly. At least 2 clips before screaming for us to hurry and get in the truck. We're all silent on the way to the hospital. We get there, and Cameron was admitted. We all kind of knew not to say anything that actually happened on the account of sounding crazy. Cameron got fixed up. We all went back to Cody's house. We didn't sleep very good that night. Finally, in the morning, we asked Cameron if he got a good look at the creature. He said he was asleep, then dragged out of his tent by his arm. That's how his arm broke. The creature dragged him for over a mile before it dropped him. He started running towards us. He said whatever it was taller than him, covered in hair, and had these really big yellow glowing eyes. To this day, we have never went back there. After that, we all kind of drifted apart and never really hung out again. It's scary how beautiful the place was in the morning and what a nightmare it was at night.
Yeah, what's up with this guy's parents who knew that this was a strange things happen here and that it was like dangerous or paranormal and just let them go and knew like, hey, you're gonna need a gun.
Yeah.
Oh, because there's coyotes. Oh, is that what you were talking about when you said that weird things happen here? Was it the coyotes? No, it was something bad and you didn't protect me from it. You just let me come here.
Well, you know,
How
nobody.
old are these kids?
They were 15, 18, and
They're
19.
15, 18, 15 years old, getting drunk
Yep.
and having a gun.
Dropping out, shooting.
Dropping out of school, shooting things. I'm surprised his parents even showed up. I'm surprised they didn't just go to Florida and leave him there forever.
Well, I know.
I'm getting real Matt's dad vibes from this story. You
Matt,
remember Matt's dad?
no.
Oh, that was last week.
What happened?
Matt's dad was a paranormal investigator and he was
Oh,
supposed
that's
to
right. That's
help them. He
right.
did
Oh,
nothing.
yeah.
Yeah, this is real Matt's dad vibes. What do you think?
Well, Edie, I mean, here's the thing. You know, you got to understand that not everybody thinks these kinds of things are going to happen to them. And
But he
every.
did think it was going to happen. He gave him a
Well, you
gun.
know, always be prepared. It's better to have it than not have it, right? And these are country guys, you know, so in their heads they're like, "Oh, we can handle whatever. Don't worry." And they're like, "Okay, we try." Yeah, well, you know, these kids are survivalists, eh?
I don't care what area, I mean, whether it's city, country, or whatever my kid lives in. If I know that there's paranormal things that happen to the point where my kid's gonna need a gun,
Yeah.
I'm not gonna let him go over there.
Well, he didn't know it was paranormal. He thought it was coyotes, you
No,
know?
that's not what he said. He said that weird things happen,
Yeah.
and that's what sparked their interest. If it was
Oh.
coyotes, he would have said that, but he said weird things.
Yeah, you know, just because you're a city girl, right? And
Oh,
that's all right for that liberal parenting that you want to do.
now I'm a city girl, but
You're a city girl.
you always say I'm country
Well,
girl. Now I'm
obviously
city.
you're
All
not.
right.
You're a city girl. You want to put a helmet on your kid. You want to walk around on a leash, not for good old country parents. We tell you, there's some strange things happen out there. Y'all want to go out there? Fine, you want to go out there? Good, no. That's fine. He just carries a gun. We'll
Yeah.
come get you.
All
But
right.
in their head, they're like, "Oh, those boys, I don't know what
Yeah,
they're
and
getting
then
into."
also just the sheer annoyance of having to go get them or something. Anyway, obviously another dog man. We've got the whole aspects of it. The very being very tall dog man, the yellow red eyes, glowing eyes dog man. These all screaming dog man at
Yeah,
me. Right in
going
my
after the loner dog man, going after the outcast, the wimp. Oh, they're picking on him. Good, we'll grab him and break his arm, and I'll eat him.
Yeah. Making fun of his hair,
Yeah,
dog
dog
man.
man.
Harassing him online, dog man,
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
yeah.
Stealing lawn ornaments from him, dog man,
Whoa,
right?
yeah.
Typical dog man behavior. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this very fun episode of True Scary Stories with Edie. We love you guys. Anything else you want to say?
No, I, you know, you guys are great. I don't really have nothing else to
Oh,
say.
that was nice. That's very undog man of you.
Yeah.